It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
We do have a special guest in the studio today, but it's going to remain a secret until after the first break. How about that? And it is smiling. Pronoun free today. We want to get the non-fun parts over with first, but first, I want to welcome everybody, all the regulars. You know, we depend on you. That's why we keep doing this year after year. About, what, halfway through year nine now, or second half of year nine?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Second half of year nine.
Yep, unbelievable. And if you're new to the show,
thank you.
Oh, by the way, I see both of us came in. This must be a very special day because we both dressed up for like we're going to work in the Senate. You notice I even did the shirt. This is my Fetterman shirt.
Gotcha.
That's another story. We'll probably talk about it, but we'll see. Anyway, for those of you who are new, try to stick around for the whole hour because you'll always learn something. And we will be talking about all kinds of topics today that are on our minds and of interest to us. But we know that there's a bunch of people out there with a bunch of things on their mind, too. And all you have to do to go to the head of the class is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. And callers always get priority on this show. So don't be afraid to call and ask. And always remember two things. Number one, the easier the question, the better your hosts look, and that's on you. And the other one is, if there's something that you think you're probably the Lone Ranger, you're the only person that doesn't know it, I will promise you, no matter what, there are other people who will learn from it as well. So don't be shy. We don't bite. Even for most annoying callers, we don't bite. Most.
Depends.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, let me turn it into a form of a question. Is it October yet?
Not yet, unfortunately.
Darn it.
But September has really lived up to its reputation this year.
Or lived down to it, maybe.
Worst month of the year historically, and worst month of the year this year, and worst month of the year last year. So it's really, really just reputations come from somewhere, and we're seeing why. Fortunately, as you mentioned, another week we'll be out of September, and we get into what is traditionally one of the best parts of the year, which is the three-month period that makes up the fourth quarter. So not all is lost, although we may have a rough week again next week. We'll see what happens. But
I'm not promising anything, but I promise you that if we don't, I'll be surprised.
Yeah, a little bit, but you never know. Everything's so oversold right now. There are some bargains out there, so it could really go either way. At the beginning of this month, almost every corner of the market was overbought or extremely overbought, and there really wasn't a bargain anywhere. So that's completely flipped around now, and when this happens, you tend to see some mean reversion back towards the 50-day moving average. Not always, but that is what the tendency is. When I say overbought or extremely overbought, it has to do with how far a stock's price is from its, or an ETF or a mutual fund even, is from its 50-day moving average. Overbought or oversold means that it's within one standard deviation, and extreme overbought or oversold means it's more than two standard deviations away. And so right now you're seeing a ton of the market in the extremely oversold area. The Dow, I believe, is the only index that's just oversold. It hasn't reached the extreme level yet. It's kind of been the one that hasn't varied as much over the last 2 years. It's been much more steady. I think it was down less than 10% last year, but the gains this year had been much more muted on the Dow as well compared to the NASDAQ. So depending on how you like to invest and your how much volatility you can withstand, the Dow, if you don't like volatility, the Dow has been the place to be this year and last year as well. It's important to put events like this in perspective, though. A decline of 10% or more, but less than 20% is called a correction. The S&P averages one correction per year historically. Not every year sees a correction, though, so you can have more than one, and frequently will see more than one in a year. And so far, the S&P is off just 5.75% from its recent high, and it's up 12.5% this year. Now, think about that. It feels terrible right now, but if the year was over today, would you be happy with a 12.5% year on the S&P?
I'd be happy enough that if I could vote, I'd vote it over with.
I agree. That's a far better result than what I thought was even possible this year if you had asked me in December or January. I really didn't see a scenario where we would be up 12.5% with 3 months left in the year. And then you combine that with a 5% return on your treasuries or your fixed income portfolio, and it's pretty likely that you would see a 6 to 10% return this year if you're invested in a balanced, diversified portfolio. So,
and the absence of anything crazy, you're absolutely right.
And those results, if you had said that in January, I guarantee that 90% of investors would have said, I will take that.
I agree. And what if we get a strong fourth quarter, which is historically the way?
Yeah. I mean, you could see, you could push that into a 11-12% mm-hmm. return with a strong fourth quarter easily. So,
no, we should probably say past history is not a predictor of future results.
Correct.
Because somebody somewhere once said that if you're going to be in this business and you're on the radio, you should say that once in a while.
Absolutely true.
It's true. Yeah.
But the funny thing about that statement is that this year has really followed the historic pattern of the market, which is a slow, steady increase up through the summer, kind of take the summer off and move sideways, have a bad September, and then traditionally or on average, the market then moves up in the fourth quarter. And this year really fits that script almost to a T. So I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen in the fourth quarter, but if it continues to follow the historic pattern, that would be what would happen.
Quick unofficial trivia question. How long has it been since the Dow was this low?
I don't know.
July 10th.
Okay. Not long ago.
Yeah, it always helps me when we get into a time like this to do a little perspective. And, okay, so we gave up July, August, and some of September so far. And hopefully we'll have that back in October, November, and then be marching forward again.
Mm-hmm. So why did the market drop this week, besides seasonal weakness? Part of it had to do with the Fed, as it usually does these days. I honestly don't mind Jerome Powell. I think that he has the worst job in the world. I would never want to be put in his position.
I alternate on him, and I do have sympathy on many days.
Yeah, it's because basically what he did this week was announce no rate hike and said that we may be in this high interest rate environment for a bit longer.
Yep.
And we're coming up on a break, but I want to tell you why that's actually good news and not bad news, even though the market took it as bad news.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And it does show you that when the market is in a mood,
it just does what it does.
September doldrums, he could have said, I'm dropping it. They would have said, oh, no, the economy's going
to crash. Exactly. Yeah.
So you can't please anybody some of the time. And that is the month of September in a nutshell. All right, we're going to take a quick break, pay some bills, and we'll come back with a very special announcement from a very special person. So don't go anywhere. It's the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have a trivia question, but it is going to get delayed for a moment because we have a special public service announcement brought to you by sort of a special delivery.
Yeah. So my daughter, Taylor, wanted to come on and talk about a event that's very near and dear to all of our hearts. As you, if you listen frequently, you'll know that we support the Joe DiWalle Foundation, which actually supports St. Jude Hospital. And Taylor wanted to talk a little bit about the upcoming event for the Joe DiWalle Foundation. So take it away, Taylor.
Okay. Hey, I'm Taylor Van Wee. So in honor of the Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, I wanted to share an event hosted by the Joe DiWalle Memorial Foundation. On November 4th, come join us to race and help raise funds for the Mulligan Lab at St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. I would love your support since I knew Joe DiWalle and we were close friends, and I hope to help other kids fighting cancer today. Sign up or you could donate at joestrong.org, and that's joestrong.org.
That was great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What's the date?
It's November 4th.
And
it's going to be in Nocatee again.
Okay, and you put your dad in charge of the weather, right? because he's really good at that one.
I'll get on that.
Okay.
Okay, cool. Good. Yeah, that is very near and dear to all of us because they were good friends.
Yep.
And it was a...
They still are. And yeah it's just it was a sad situation. Joe had a form of leukemia that couldn't be cured.
Yeah, it's one of those stories like the Jimmy Buffett story. Normally wouldn't be a problem.
Right.
You just go get fixed and come back. But he's got this weird thing, and Joe got this weird thing. And the reason they're funding it is the Mulligan?
The Mulligan Lab, okay. Yeah.
I thought so. That is a specific part of St. Jude's, and they're working on curing this and things like it.
Well, curing that type of cancer that took Joe.
So the problem with some things, we've lost friends to other weird ones too. The problem with those rare ones is that there's no impetus for a lot of research on those because it affects so few people.
Yeah, when not enough people get it, they don't dedicate resources to solving it. But in this case, they are. So
yeah, we lost a good friend a very few years ago, and she had this form of sarcoma, I guess. He said, in this country today, you have it, and there may be one or two others, but no more than that. Well, obviously, no research has been done on that. It's just when you have priorities, you have to have them according to how you can do the most good with the scarce resources you have. And so this one is one of them.
Yep. And by the way, it's just a 5K. You can run. Mm-hmm. You can walk. There's also a one-mile fun run, I believe, and then a virtual option as well. So, if you can, please donate joestrong.org.
Yeah. Probably also go out there and hand water bottles to people.
Yeah, volunteers are always welcome as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good. Well, that was the first time on radio for the young lady.
I got to start them somewhere.
Won't be the end, I bet. And it's funny, too, because she's, for those of you who know her, you'll know this is right, she's normally so shy and retiring.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now that was not true.
That was not true at all.
But... Okay, we're going to... Oh, I want to do the trivia question before Adam gets to finishing the market wrap. As usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. I want to talk about debt, since everybody probably noticed that this week the U.S. hit another milestone. We crossed $33 trillion in public debt.
Great.
Yeah, an honor that I would rather not have, I would say. But that's not the only debt in the country. In fact, if you add all the private debt and all the public debt together, we are at 334% of GDP.
Hmm.
That's a whopping amount of debt.
That really is.
Now, China has much less public debt per unit of GDP than we do. But when you add in the public debt there, it also becomes a much bigger number. We're at 334%. Where is China? Total public, private, in terms of their GDP. It's just a whole number in percentage. All right.
All right. So I was talking about the what Powell said and why the market interpreted it as negative. What he said was that we might be in this high-rate environment for longer. And I think that anybody with a pulse who thinks about these things could have seen that without him saying it, because clearly the economy is still doing well. In fact, we're looking at potentially some more inflation because you've got oil over $90 again.
And it's not going to drop real fast either.
And we've got a strong dollar, and there's just all sorts of things that are happening right now. People are still buying houses, although Angela in the show before us did mention that 26% of contracts in Jacksonville were canceled last week due to buyer apprehension. Yeah. That's insane and not a great sign, but we'll talk about that later.
To me, actually, it's a sign of intelligence of the local buyers. Because if you're going to be iffy on it any time, this is a pretty good time to be iffy, I think.
Yeah, but then maybe don't execute a contract or maybe stop shopping for a house. I don't know.
That seems
like But you're pretty far into the process if you're canceling a contract.
Tracking out doesn't seem like a very good move.
No, and it usually is not free to do so. But
that's true, too.
We'll see. Anyway, so what he was saying is that the economy is too strong right now to bet on rates coming down, because if rates come down next year, that means that that something has gone wrong fundamentally in the economy. We're sliding into a recession. Usually with the Fed, we're already in a recession because they're late to the party. So that means that he's saying that next year looks better than what they thought, more or less. And so why is that bad news? Because the market wants rates to come down. And the thing is, getting used to higher interest rates takes some time, especially when you've been 15 years of ZERP and NERP and whatever. It's going to take some time, but people are adjusting. People are still buying houses. 75% of contracts in Jacksonville were executed last week, too. So
and at excellent prices, meaning high.
High prices, high interest rates. The average mortgage is at 7.75%. But the flip side of high interest rates is you get 5.5% on a short-term treasury right now. You can get 5% on a high-yield savings account. You can get 5.2% on a money market fund. So you're making more money at the same time. There are upsides to high interest rates. Mm-hmm. So they do hurt stock valuations, though, and that's why you're seeing the market react the way that it did. So
but eventually, you know, there's nothing more certain in life than change. Eventually they'll peak. Eventually they'll go back down. And all those people in the mortgage brokerage industry that are laid off will return to their old jobs and they'll start doing your refinancing.
And the other thing is, if you look at periods in history when interest rates were higher, that is, it's not like the market didn't go up during those times. It has gone up during higher interest rates. We're not even at high interest rates. We're probably at like average interest rates right now, maybe slightly high.
17. Well, no, it's a different number I'm thinking of. Do you know, I got to see if I wrote it down. The Mort Gas.
Oh, that's not a real, that's just something
no,
they made
up. The misery index is multi-decade high, but the interest rates themselves, they're not anywhere near. This we would have longed for these rates back when you were born.
Yeah.
Everybody in our generation was just being torn apart by the interest rates. But then again, you could get 12, 13, 14% in the money market.
Mm-hmm.
So it all happens for a reason. They're intertwined, and they always will be, and that includes right now.
Yeah. The one thing that does need to happen, though, is people with 3% mortgages need to start selling their homes again. And I think that will happen. It will just take some time. Right now, it feels like, oh, we can't sell our home. We have such a great mortgage. And I get it. I feel the same. Yeah. But
well,
at some
point, in the old
days,
we always made sure that our mortgages were assumable. And they didn't hesitate to do that when you're paying 7.5 to 8 mm-hmm. and 3/4. But sure, we'll let it be assumed.
Yeah.
They knew like we did, they'd eventually fall below that.
There's a company right now that just started that is focusing on helping people assume mortgages.
Yeah.
Who knows? Something will change in there, but it needs to change. People can't stay in their homes forever. There are too many reasons to move or to relocate or to downsize or upsize. So I think you will see that eventually.
That sounds like the creative sort of thing that a company like SoFi would get into.
It wasn't them. It was a startup. But yeah, I could see that.
Maybe they'll buy them out.
The other bit of good news this week is we saw 3 successful IPOs mm-hmm. after a run of 0 for the longest time. In fact, once SPACs went out of favor in like 2021, you really haven't seen much in the way of IPO activity. But Arm Holdings, Instacart, and Kivayo, I'm not sure how to say that last
one. The only one of those I knew was Instacart.
Yeah, they all did IPOs this week. They all initially traded higher and then sort of drifted lower, but they were all considered successful IPOs. Mm-hmm. So that was nice to see. We need to get that market back into place. It's been too much of a drought. New companies being traded.
Right, and companies do tend to disappear from the exchange, some from failure, that usually being in the smaller ones, but others from mergers and takeovers, private capital and that kind of thing. So when you get to the point that your S&P 500 can only have 450 stocks in it, we need some IPOs.
We do.
If you look at the which one is it? The Russell 2000? I think it's way short of 2000.
Interesting.
Yeah, just something that happens. They come and they go, and as long as there are innovative people out there, they will continue to come and go. So I'm looking forward to more of that, especially as the market starts to recover a little bit. So we'll see. Not everything's gloom and doom out there. That is for darn sure. But we got to take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about all kinds of fun stuff. Got some higher level mathematical terms and that sort of thing to throw around. So put your thinking caps on for the next one and get ready with some questions, and you can call us when the lines get opened again shortly. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question is still out there. And it says, total debt of America, meaning public and private, versus our GDP, the debt is 334% of GDP. What is that number in China? And there is a reason I bring it up. All right, I think we're tapped out on the market. I don't want to be the purveyor of gloom and doom, but it's likely we have another ho-hum to who knows week. But I'll tell you one thing for absolute certain. It will turn around one day, and you better be ready.
Yeah, so it's actually the last 2 weeks in September are the among the weakest 2 weeks of the year. Since 2003, the S&P's 500's average change in the last 2 weeks of September has been a decline of 1.02%, with gains just 30% of the time. The only two-week period that is weaker has been the 2 weeks after the close on February 21st, when the S&P 500 has averaged a decline of 1.16% in the same time period.
I'm trying to think what particular significance that has.
You know, but because last week was so bad, you could actually see a good week and still hit the average next week. So we'll see what happens. You know, this is why you can't, because 30% of the time, it's also been up in the last 2 weeks of September. So you really can't just sell based on time. You can't time the market, and you can't sell based on historical norms. It doesn't make sense.
If you
you're going to lose.
If you did it once and won, you'd probably do it again and lose.
Exactly.
That's just the way it is. Okay, in higher level mathematics, at which I studied so hard for many, many years and have forgotten 99% of it, we have, oh, looky here. I think I'm going to like this. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Van Wees extraordinaires. I was privileged to listen a while back. And, of course, the last major super heart attack that should have killed me didn't. So God doesn't want me yet. It changed my life a lot slower. But I can talk and almost walk, and I definitely can think. I heard a co-host, and I think it was Angela's show, and it was a Van Wee extraordinaire.
You know, that was rumored.
Well, I thought maybe that the Russians or Chinese tapped into our Wi-Fi and fluted it, but it sounded like one of you guys.
That was actually RI instead of AI. That would be real intelligence on that show.
Hey, do you believe AI is up? I had to go to a pension board fund. They had to come pick me up recently. AI is up in less than a year, 58% on stock. Where were they when we needed to buy a couple hundred thousand dollars worth?
No kidding.
Yeah, I think it'll go. My unprofessional guru, 80 plus years, I want to say probably in a year and a half, it'll go to like 138% up, but then it's going to start probably leveling off. But, you know,
well, the novelty will eventually wear off. Look what happened to the non fungible tokens.
You know that? You sound so good live, and I'm so glad to be alive, and keep those prayers coming.
Well,
out of Orange Park and Old Phil and the Boatyard and everybody. Love you guys.
Well, I'll tell you something that might interest you. My wife has been asking about you. She listens all the time, and she says, haven't heard from Phil.
Yeah.
What's her first name?
Sarah.
Tribute to Sarah, who keeps the Van Wees in line.
Yeah.
Miss Sarah, you're a princess. You're so divine.
Does.
Phil's not doing best in health, but his mind still works. And when my health allows,
well,
I will call with no quirks.
Well, good. Just keep being as ornery as you are, and nobody will ever take you off the earth.
Hey, my younger brother is a foot taller than I. Shows up at my hospital bed after 36 hours, and he says, "Oh my gosh!" I said, "What's wrong now?" He says, "I said you need more money." "No, Only the good die young. That's why God didn't get out of my nurse.
Billy Joel.
Get him out of my room now.
I love it. Well, it is wonderful.
And, you know, if they were to give some kind of like a Nobel Prize out for financial gurus, and I got a lot of clout around. That's why I still have four cell phones with too many contacts on. But you would get the golden award for Nobel of Finance. Keep up the good work, guys. And you're all a lot younger than me, but someday you might be older than me.
You're very, very inspiring, I guess, is the word I'm looking for.
You're so upbeat, and you're like I was raised with my Marine dad and the Depression era kid that he was. And guru of construction and everything, you cut to the chase and you say what's facts are, you know.
Well, that's our mission here. We'll tell you the truth as we see it, and if we're wrong, we'll apologize the next week.
And you do give your own jest, which a lot of people don't do. They read it from the script, and you guys can, if the script went down, if you were the president and the teleprompter, that's why the president walks away yesterday. Exactly. The world emergency. The teleprompter went down. He never rehearsed it, so guess what? He doesn't know what to say. They got to get him out of there before he puts his size 12 in his mouth. And keep the missus on the payroll, or maybe she should keep you on the payroll. That really moved me.
I'm hoping for that one.
I'm going to let you go.
Good to hear from you. You sound excellent, and I'm so happy.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah, definitely. It's been quite a while, so I'm glad to hear from him.
But as he says, only the good die young. So with a little luck, he and I will be having these conversations for a good long time yet.
Maybe so.
All right. And in higher mathematics, there's a concept that we call necessary and sufficient. And necessary and sufficient comes into play on a whole bunch of things. It is not strictly related to geometric proofs and things like that. In fact, it's very applicable in financial planning. And you might ask, well, how is that? And I have some examples here. At this time of the year, and we're about to turn into the fourth quarter, there are a lot of things that we as financial planners have to start doing because we have to make sure that every single client is ready for the transition out of this year and into the next one. It is necessary that we look at them and find out what they need, and it is sufficient that we get all 100% of them and nothing less. For instance, anyone with an IRA, 401k, anything like that, if they haven't started to draw their required minimum distributions yet, then we have to look at that and make a plan to get them done.
So, and this year, it's a little more complicated because if you were with TD Ameritrade, which our clients were, and are now with Schwab, and guess what? Did not transfer over. Was RMD information. Yes. So
we're having to go back. It is necessary for us to go back over the record.
But it's not just us. This could apply to you also. If you were a TD Ameritrade retail customer, you could be in the same boat. So make sure that you go back and check what you took out from TD, and then combine that with what you are going to take out from Schwab, and make sure that you're not going over or going under based on those two different numbers.
And then there's a subset of those people who are turning age 73, and therefore are now subject to RMD rules. It is necessary that we inform them of that just in case, but it's not sufficient because the whole story says, but you don't have to take it this year. If you're turning 73 this year, you have until March 31st next year to take your first required minimum distribution. But if you do that, it is not sufficient just to take that one. You also have to take a second one before December 31st, and it is necessary that we tell you that. So you see how we go through this on topic after topic. Is it necessary? Yes. Then let's get it done. Is it sufficient? If not, then we have to do more. Now, if somebody came in with a small business, 40, 50, 70 employees, and they wanted to start a plan, and we look around and it's determined that the best plan for them is the plan called a simple IRA because it's low on bookkeeping and that sort of thing. It is necessary, if they want one for next year, to have it opened by September 30th. it's the only exception I can think of. You can do things like both kinds of IRAs. You can do 401ks. You can do individual 401ks and all kinds of things that you can do after the first of the year, even retroactive to 2023. That is the exception. It has to be done by next Friday in order to have it available for 2024. So there again, those are the kind of necessary and sufficient things we do with our clients and with the people who come to see us or anybody who calls us on the phone. So it makes this year is going to make us a little bit more, just busier, because usually the records are sitting right there on the website. Here's what needs to be done. Here's what's been done. Here's the difference. Well, as Adam pointed out, we no longer have that luxury. Also, we have to ask people who are not taking out enough of their 401k deposits or whatever to do so, to max them out. We have to point out that they can contribute to a lot of things after the first of the year, but the only way you can contribute to your 401k is through payroll deduction. That means your payroll has to be paid in this year if you want to hurry it up a little bit, bump it up a bit. And most employers get pretty busy this time of year. So if you're one of those people that wants to get more money than you are currently taking out and get it in there by December 31, we advise you to go to your employer and you either make a plan with you or us, or you can go to the employer and say, here's what I got to have done by the end of the year. How fast can you react? And this is particularly true with plans like the TSP plan, where the employer is so large that they have really, really long time frames on getting anything done. All right, a little more to wrap up right after a quick break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have on the phone, good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
What's happening?
How are we? Nothing much down here. Up north of us in the Dismal Swamp, there's a few things happening.
That's for sure.
I just read that if we do have this federal shutdown on September 30th, one result of that will be there'll be a postponement of the announcement of the 2024 cost of living adjustment.
Isn't that special?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is supposed to be, I think, around 3.2%, something like
That's the latest estimate. It actually bumped up a little bit because the last couple of months we had a little bump in the inflation rate. So.
Yeah, and speaking of books, I just finished reading a very interesting book about the workings in Washington. It's called Filthy Rich Politicians by a man by the name of Matt Lewis, and it was interesting. One thing that's interesting is that, in my opinion, very good senator from Missouri, Josh Hawley, he reintroduced the Pelosi Act bill. The Pelosi Act bill, which is preventing elected leaders from owning securities and investments.
I love it. It's such a great idea, and it's hilarious that he named it that, but also it just makes sense. It's so bad. What, I mean, these people get away with they're outside the law. It's incredible.
Oh, they'll go around it anyway.
Yeah, they will, but at least it makes an attempt.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to know the workings of Washington, there's thousands of books out there. Steve mentions a few, and I just got a copy of Mark Levin's book, The Democrats Hate America. I'm sure that's going to be very interesting.
Oh, yeah, that was just released Tuesday, so you're on the cusp here.
Yeah. Anyhow, not to delay anything, I'll take a shot at the China debt. I'm going to go with 303%.
You are not far off, but you're a little high.
Okay. All right, gentlemen. Have a great weekend.
We appreciate it. Thanks so much.
All right. Take care.
Bye. Yeah, and chuckling about that a little bit. Jason Chaffetz's book, too. I've talked about this on the air. That's another real good one. About the puppeteers who control the puppets. And I know for sure that that guy who walked out on the president of Brazil was a puppet. Did you see that?
I don't know what that is.
Doing a press conference and before the obligatory handshake, he just turns around and walks off. This is getting bad, folks. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. That's for sure. One more quick note on the year-end planning. There is a strange rule, maybe strange, maybe not, it's been that way forever, for a Roth IRA. Roths are, of course, funded with after-tax money, and the money comes out tax-free most of the time. But there is a rule in there that is easy to satisfy, and it takes away some of the final possibilities that you're not going to get it all back free. It's called the five-year rule. You want to have your Roth open for 5 years as quickly as possible. Well, as it happens, the Feds facilitated that for you. If you open one and put a small deposit in it, or a big one if you got the money, doesn't matter. You have to have money first deposited in the account anytime between now and the end of the year. On January 1, you start year two. You get a whole year's credit for just having it open, even if only for one day or 2 days in 2023. That's year one. So 2024 comes, and whether or not you actually use it, you're already in year two. So when it comes to year five, when the calendar turns over to January, the first business day of January, you have your 5 years in, and it's very helpful. So anybody who thinks they might ever want to take advantage of a Roth should open it up, even if, even if it's a small deposit this year, get it open. And by the way, you can have as many Roths as you want to. The five-year period starts with the Roth this year if you get one open. And that is something that everybody should remember. Plus, if you have a child who's capable of doing some actual work and willing, I guess, and you can actually pay the child for it, that earned income can go into a Roth IRA for the child. Even if it's not the same dollar bill you actually paid to the child, you can actually fund it up to the point of what the child earned. So think about getting those Roth IRAs open, and it might just save you 10% down the line if you are using the Roth for one of its many wonderful intended purposes. Just a little, another little year-end trick. I got a little flyer here in the mail that I wanted to talk about briefly. Pretty, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful looking lunch at Nona Blue. A lot of people know where Nona Blue is. I've never been there, but Adam has, I think.
Yeah.
And it looks like a flyer advertising Nona Blue. It's really well done. And then you start looking at it and say, turn volatility into opportunity, learning how to maximize your retirement income, on and on. And I still can't figure out, who is this? So in this tiny little thing in the corner, it's somebody, there's a name, no credentials or initials or anything, just somebody wants to talk. But a couple of these I thought were telling. Learn how to protect yourself against future drops in the market without sacrificing the chance to grow your money now. Mm. Quick, what's the product?
Most likely an equity index annuity.
Dang. I raised him well, didn't I? Safe havens, CDs. We'll show you better options than CDs. And da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm telling you, people, don't fall for these things.
Yeah, there's a
it's a scam.
There's a time and a place for almost every type of investment product, but when someone's trying to sell you on something without knowing your situation, that's when you need to be wary.
And if you want absolute proof, what this is, nowhere in this thing, and I went over it in detail, is the word annuity mentioned.
No.
If you are selling annuities and you don't use the word annuity, it's being done wrong.
How many people come into our office and say, I have this thing,
yeah,
and they don't know what it is, and it's an annuity?
One famous case where they brought in two of them that had been purchased from a competitor, and I read them over and said, yeah, they're equity index annuities. They're not annuities. Yes, they are. Look right here, annuity contract.
Mm-hmm.
We told him we didn't want an annuity, and he promised us this wasn't.
This wasn't, yeah.
I've heard it. That one was the most notable, but there are plenty of others too. We've turned a lot of them into other things that are much better for people. If you have one, and especially if you just signed up for something like that, know that you have a grace period where you can just turn it back in. I've had phone calls like that on the radio show too, like, hey, I think I just made a mistake. So mm-hmm. Come in Monday morning and we'll look it over. And more than once, that's turned into, yes, you had just made a mistake. We just unwound it, and there was no penalty, no harm, no foul. Just some more things to think about. Okay. Oh, I don't know how much good news you can handle, so I guess probably I'll just give you some bad news. How's that? If you were in charge of setting your own personal budget and you had 7 days to do it, wouldn't you be inclined to take about a four-day weekend instead of working?
Yeah, I would go on vacation.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Because there is about a $4 trillion spending package that is due, budgeting package, that is due next Saturday at midnight. So what did they do? They hopped on planes yesterday and went back to the various states. And since so many of them are from so far away, Monday is spent getting back there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm assuming they'll have to work Saturday because at 11:59 they'll be closing some deal. You know that from the way they work. But they come back with Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday to do all of this. And I've got stacks of other things that remain to be done yet. But look at here's a few reasons why we want to get this budgeting process in order. In this group that they're trying to just extend, there are a few items. His name is David Ditch. He's not somebody I regularly read. But he pulled out seven real doozies. Chucky Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand want to dish out $1 million to the We Act for Environmental Justice Organization. Whatever. They apply the concept of intersectionality to climate and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. Number two, $3.5 million for parade balloons in Michigan.
Wow.
Parade balloons. I love a parade. Three, $500,000 to refurbish the headquarters of the NAACP in Baltimore. You think maybe they could raise that money, wouldn't you? Number four, $4 million for a sewer in Alaska, which is in a little town, tiny city of Pelican, Alaska.
Why is that a federal project? That makes no sense.
Because Lisa Murkowski's doing it. She's a federal employee. So it's home to 98 people.